This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Fall is planting season. Did you know that many plants and trees actually do better when planted this time of year? I didn't know it either, but you have to know where to start. That's why I love fastgrowingtrees.com. It doesn't matter if you live in a sunny south or if the air is getting chilly where you are, their plant experts can help you find the perfect fit for your space. They have all the plants your yard needs, like fruit trees, privacy trees, flowering trees, shrubs, and so much more. Fast growing trees make it so easy to get the dream yard that you need. Order online and get your plants delivered directly to your door in just a few days without leaving your home. They're alive, they thrive, they're guaranteed, and ensures your plants arrive happy and healthy. All plants and trees are locally grown in the U.S., ensuring they will thrive in your yard. You can feel confident that these plants and trees will thrive in your yard because they are grown to last by American farmers on American soil. So how difficult and annoying is it to shop around for plants in person? Think about how messy your car gets when you do get the right plant. Then by the time you get home, it's always on its side. And then when you get it, you think to yourself, what did the guy tell me I should be planting this? And how much shade does it need? And when do I water it? You don't have to worry about that anymore. So this fall, they have the best deals for your yard, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get 15% off their first purchase when they're using promo code KILLMEAD at checkout. That's 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the promo code KILLMEAD at checkout. Now's the perfect time to plant. Use KILLMEAD to save today. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Check out this link below or in show notes and support the show.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
He always said to me, if we could just figure out how to bring the Holy Spirit into a Trump rally, I think you've done it.
What man intends for evil, God intends for good. Evil thought that there'd be a funeral today. God has created a revival right here in this house right now.
He was constantly expanding his horizons, but he just didn't have knowledge. He had wisdom, an uncanny amount of wisdom for a man as young as he was. Wisdom that sometimes it takes a lifetime to accumulate. He had it in just 31 years.
My wife, who's here with me today, and I have set up a scholarship in the hope that Charlie's children will go to a good college. I have one in mind.
After Charlie's assassination, we didn't see violence. We didn't see rioting. Instead, we saw what my husband always prayed he would see in this country. We saw revival.
He asked me if I was scared of dying. And I said to him, there's a lot worse things than death. And one of those things is if we lost our constitutional rights in this country and that our children were raised as slaves. I said to Charlie, I said, sometimes the best consolation we can hope for is that we get to die with our boots on. Well, Charlie died with his boots on.
For Charlie, we will never shrink, we will never cower, and we will never falter, even when staring down the barrel of a gun.
He's a martyr now for American freedom. I know I speak for everyone here today when I say that none of us will ever forget Charlie Kirk, and neither now will history.
Charlie died with incomplete work, but not with unfinished business.
Hi, everyone, welcome to One Nation. I'm Brian Kilmeade. It was a somber, but I think inspirational, motivational day. And it was like that across the country, maybe in your living room. And also, I think around the world. They were honoring a conservative activist, his name Charlie Kirk, at the stadium and around the stadium. 200,000 people turned out to memorialize and celebrate his life in Glendale. The event even unifying two former best friends, titans of the world, President Trump and Elon Musk. This five-hour memorial was unlike anything I've ever seen. Every speech hit its mark. I watched every one of them. No one spoke of violence. No one spoke of revenge. Each speaker reflecting on a different side of one of the most accomplished 31-year-olds in history. It ended knowing his mission would go on without him, with a direction and drive inspired by him. His widow, Erica Kirk, receiving a standing ovation, of course. She's now CEO of the organization that Charlie built, Turning Point USA. And they are not slowing down. They are hosting an event tomorrow night at the University of Minnesota. It's the first of the American Comeback for the American Comeback Tour. It's going to be a big event and the first since Charlie's assassination. One of those speaking at the memorial and did a great job, Charlie's executive producer of the Charlie Kirk Show, longtime friend and confidant, Andrew Colvett. Andrew joins me right now. Andrew, you've had the longest of long days and the longest of last 10 days. What was it like on the stage? What was it like behind the scenes tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I think somebody said that the Holy Spirit was humming like a tuning fork, and that's what it felt like. It felt like you could feel God moving. And, Brian, I don't think anybody in living memory can think of a moment like this where the leaders of the free world, one by one, one after the next, got on stage, and they talked about God, they talked about their faith, and they talked about how Charlie moved them in a way to follow God more closely than they had, to be better husbands, to be better fathers or wives or friends. And it was a truly remarkable thing. And, you know, I won't use any names, Brian, but we had a bunch of, you know, Grammy award winning recording artists backstage because they were on stage for a large part of the morning. And I overheard them saying, like, you know, I do this all the time. And I've never seen anything remarkably anywhere near this. This was remarkable. This was breathtaking. And I just think, Brian, what a fitting tribute to our friend, my brother, business partner, the founder of and CEO of Turning Point USA. What a great tribute to him, because ultimately his life was about Jesus Christ. It was the foundation of who he was. He knew everything else flowed from there. And I felt like today was just a wonderful tribute to who he really was. And so many friends came out to do it.
And you know how valued I thought his opinions were. And I try to get him on as much as possible. Later on in the show, yeah, we got some highlights from when he came on this very show. But, Andrew, what happens to the podcast? And how do you harness this momentum you have right now? I know it's impossible not to be sad. But you also have to say you're one of the people they're counting on to harness this moment. I saw you up to 62,000 new chapter requests.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost 70,000 actually now. And it just keeps growing, wow, by the day, Brian, because something has ignited in this country. Something has been unleashed in young people across the country. It's been unleashed for all age groups, certainly. But I think it's important that, you know, Charlie had a special mission to reach the next generation, and they are responding in record numbers for Turning Point. So, yeah, the goal for the podcast and the radio show and it's actually a streaming TV show as well. We took it on all those different mediums. It's going to go on primarily because I know that's what Charlie would want us to do. And secondly, because that's what Erica Kirk has told us is going to happen. She says that the show must go on, and so we're going to honor that. I'm excited to do it. You know, forgive us as the pieces come together and as we figure out what that's going to look like. But absolutely, I think something's become clear to all of the Turning Point staff, all of the Charlie Kirk Show staff, is that we spent so much time with this person. And Brian, by the way, to the point you made, you were always so generous booking Charlie and putting him on your show, and I know that he just loved it. He loved you, and I know that that went both ways. But, you know, the people that were close to Charlie and closest to how he was like and the energy that he put out and the lessons that you learned just absorbing being around this amazing leader, you can't replace that. We're all sort of coming to grips with the fact that we pulled off this event that should have taken 6 months. We did it in 6 days. And that's because of the things that Charlie implanted and imparted to us on his team. And so it's not something you can hand off, at least, you know, anytime soon. It's something that we have to be the torchbearers of. And we're honored to do that. I think it's important that we do that. And, you know, it's, you know, tomorrow's Monday, so the show must go on. We'll see you Monday.
Yeah, and if I could help out at all, please let me know. And I hope you're going to be on air personality, because I think you could do this job. I was struck by a few things in the New York Times article.
Thank you.
And one of the things was in the New York Times, Erica said several of her husband's subordinates had occasionally heard him imply that he knew his life could be cut short by violence. She found herself wondering if a part of him had already surrendered to such a prospect. I was wondering if you wanted to weigh in on that. In those moments, in those breaks in the podcast and going to lunch and dinner, did he ever talk about the danger he might be in?
Yeah, I mean, of course. Charlie faced threats all the time. We still have an incredible security team that works around the clock, and there's multiple shifts and multiple groups, and they're coordinating with law enforcement to deal with that stuff. But I mean, you know, there is an element of, you know, somebody like Charlie who was so close, the proximity to the people so close, that yes, he had to reckon with his own mortality. It's something we talked about. It was something that I do believe that he had given up to God. He had given his life over, even in his own heart and in his own prayer time. Obviously, it's not what he wanted. He made every precaution that he knew to do to make sure that didn't happen. But he had said multiple times, and we've seen the clips since, that he told the Lord that, you know, if you want to take me, take me. And it's funny, Brian, if I can, just for one more second. Last night, as I was driving to the venue, somebody called me, and they were in tears, and they said, I had this picture of Charlie, and it was amazing. And the moment it happened, and he was sitting before the Lord, and the Lord, Charlie was perplexed. He wanted to go back. He had joy, but he wanted to go back to be with Erica. And the Lord said to him, whatever you want, if you want to go back, you can, but first, let me show you the harvest if you say yes and you come with me. And Charlie saw the harvest and he said, yes, Lord, I agree. I'm ready. And I'm not saying thus saith the Lord here,
wow,
but I am saying it's a beautiful picture. And I think it's a beautiful picture of the heart of Charlie Kirk. And he was a man that believed so deeply and so profoundly and confidently in the fact that his Savior lives and that so would he one day, that he would have made that choice. I really believe that, Brian.
And what do you think changes? Last question, Andrew, and I'm going to let you get some sleep. What do you think changes tomorrow? I mean, I saw the 73,000 in the stadium, the thousands outside the stadium. I know everybody I know was watching all day, went on for 5 hours, and it still seems short. What changes tomorrow about the movement that was already impressive?
You know, in some ways, I mean, everybody has to play their own role the way that they are wired, right? And so Erica is going to be her own type of CEO. But I will tell you, Brian, she is an amazing, amazing human. I mean, everybody already knows this from watching her speak and the strength that she gathered, you know, in the most incredible of circumstances and with tragedy all around us. She found the strength to address a grieving nation that really needed to hear from her. And I will just say that same strength that she exhibited on that stage tonight and on the Friday after Charlie was assassinated, she has that innately in her. And the whole organization is ready to just march right behind her and support her and execute on the vision that Charlie had and that she shared.
Right.
So we're going to grow. I really believe that. We're going to thrive.
I believe it, too. It's going to be bigger than ever. I hope you can satisfy all those chapters, all those requests, because there's a lot of people who are going to be even more motivated after seeing what we saw today. Andrew Coleman, thanks so much. I hope hope to have you on the show again real quick. Best of luck Monday on your show.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah, come on soon.
Charlie and I were united in purpose. His passion was my passion. And now his mission is my mission. Everything that Turning Point USA built through Charlie's vision and hard work, we will make 10 times greater through the power of his memory. Chapters will grow. Thousands of new ones will be created. No assassin will ever stop us from standing up to defend those rights, ever. Because when you stop the conversation, when you stop the dialogue, this is what happens.
Erica Kirk, promising the mission her husband started at Turning Point USA will continue with open dialogue on college campuses across the country. In fact, it continues tomorrow night. When news broke of Charlie's assassination, some people cheered. Some people celebrated. Those people disagreed with what Charlie said, and they wanted to silence him. Maybe they did. So they thought it was okay to kill him. But words are not violence. That's the point my next guest made this week in writing, quote, words are not bullets. Words can't strike a man from 142 yards away, causing a torrent of blood to erupt from his wound, sending him first to the hospital and then to the morgue. Only bullets can do that. Joining me now is Greg Gukianov, president and CEO of FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. Greg, very poignant words, but I think we should qualify it with, There's individuals who are growing up in America today who get just as offended by words as they think they equate them to bullets. Why do they live in that reality?
Well, I mean, our campuses have been a font of terrible ideas relating to freedom of speech. There's the idea of hate speech and that the government should ban misinformation. And then worst of all is this rhetorical flourish that basically says that words can be violence, which, of course, excuses you responding in, quote unquote, self-defense to someone's arguments. And it's insane. It's a downward spiral.
So this shooter said, I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated with. Doesn't that back up everything that you've been telling people about? He can't negotiate with him. He could have got online and debated him.
100%. And that's one of the things about this mystical idea that hate is this all-pervasive force that allows you to act with violence towards your enemies. It's an idea that has been on campuses for a long time, and it's an idea that we must all reject as Americans.
What about the words that we use? I want to bring you to a moment on Bill Maher's show and John Fetterman sitting down and talking about it, what we got to stop doing. I'll keep in mind, a Democrat, watch.
Don't ever, ever compare anyone to Hitler. We have to turn the temperature down. It's like we can't compare people to these kinds of figures in history. And this is not an autocrat.
He's not Hitler. Calling somebody Hitler makes it a lot easier to justify things like assassinations. Let's put a load of that away, shall we?
Would that help to put the extremist language away?
You know, it depends on what you mean by it. I'm a First Amendment defender, so if you're saying that people should get in trouble or be punished for calling someone Hitler, I'm like, no, that is protected speech. You're allowed to have rhetorically strong speech. But am I saying that, do I think that's a good argument? Do I think that's a reasonable way to engage with people? Of course, there are more productive ways to do it. And Charlie, of course, showed this in his own work. And in fact, Charlie was an outspoken critic of the misuse of misinformation rationales, hate speech rationales, and of course, this awful idea that speech can be violence.
I want you to see, I want to revisit Erica's words about the shooter. Watch.
To save young men, just like the one who took his life. That young man. I forgive him.
Better person than me. She forgives him already. How important was that line? What do you think that message is?
I think that is beautiful and powerful, and it gives me hope that we can come together as a nation.
You feel the same way? You think you're optimistic we can? Do you think this could be a pivot point?
I think I unfortunately think it's probably going to get worse before it gets better on a lot of fronts, but I would like to be optimistic.
You know, you mentioned college, but this kid only went to school for 6 months. You know, this stuff was online. And his parents said over the last year, he changed, this trans, this other, became militant about it. So how do you stop what's online, especially when kids get in their 20s?
Yeah, I mean, what we need right now are basically experts and authorities that we all think are leveling with us. And unfortunately, in my book, for example, Canceling of the American Mind, I point out how much the expert class in the United States has done to undermine their own credibility. So right now we're in a stage that nobody knows who to trust, and they're turning online for that expertise they're not getting anywhere else. And it's disastrous.
Yeah, and I get that with everything. I mean, I have to convince people we landed on the moon, you know, that 9/11 wasn't an inside job. Like, there are no universal beliefs anymore. Greg, thanks so much. I appreciate it. And everyone should pick up your book to find a to unwind what everyone's thinking about these days and try to find, figure out what the next generation thinks. But there's a lot of reason to be optimistic, judging by the people that showed up in that stadium and were watching in the living rooms around the world. Coming up on this show, we have a lot more show. We're going to continue to honor the life and legacy of Charlie Kirk. We have various different peoples from all walks of life to do it. We're going to take you inside the latest on the investigation and to discuss why his mission of open debate has to continue. Don't move. More of One Nation, a special edition on this special night, this special Sunday, right here on Fox.
My melasma made me feel...
So the assassination of Charlie Kirk, exposing a warped online world more than any other time that I can remember. For example, his accused assassin, 22-year-old Tyler Robinson, appeared to confess to the killing on a platform called Discord. It's known as a gaming platform. It's got, and I was stunned to hear this, 200 million people worldwide on it. It also allows children as young as 13 to join.
Roommate, you weren't the one who did it, right? Robinson, I am. I'm sorry. Roommate, why? Robinson, why did I do it? Roommate, yeah. Robinson, I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated out. If I am able to grab my rifle unseen, I will have left no evidence.
Congress is now calling Discord and other online platforms to testify about the internet's role in inciting violent extremism. Wouldn't you do the same thing? Joining us now, retired FBI Special Agent Robert Drake. Robin, your reaction, first off, the role of Discord in particular. Is there something about that platform that that brings up questions that you want answered?
It's that platform and all the platforms out there, really. Discord doesn't really stand alone in this. There's a lot of social media platforms out there, and everyone is coming to them to have these dialogues and conversations when they can't have them in real life and be validated for thoughts and opinions and be feeling a sense of connection with anyone. They're going to go online where they can try to find like-minded people to start living in an echo chamber where nothing's being challenged and they're being tolerated at that horrendous level sometimes.
So for parents who say, my goodness, what's Discord? Well, you know, Instagram, they just learned Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat. What do you say to parents when they're worried about their 13, 14, or 17-year-old kid that may or may not be on this?
What I say to parents, get involved. We've said it so many times throughout history, is you just need to be involved with your kids, but you really need to be curious about who they're connecting with, what they're connecting on, and more importantly, take note of behavior patterns in their lives. Are they staying steady? Are they staying healthy? Are they communicating in the same way yesterday as they are today and hopefully tomorrow? Or are they becoming more isolated? Are they becoming more secular? And are they kind of going off that deep end and down towards hopefully not that dark triad?
Well, we're trying to find out new information and see if other people are involved. Lance Twiggs, his transgender partner, evidently he was kicked out of his parents' house at 18 years old over substance abuse, gender identity, and persistent video game addiction. So what does that make you think?
Makes me think that someone is going down a path of darkness, a path of not being curious about the world around them and being judged for that world as well. And so they go to the dark, not necessarily the dark web, but they're going online in these echo chambers to be validated as they're trying to seek some sort of purpose, because that's what's really lacking with most of these kids right now, is that when you start lacking purpose, you start having a reason for living, then you throw all the ideology on top of it and the economic stresses that are going on around now, and it just goes into chaos for them.
So, Robin, they're looking at a few different groups, some of which were present there. The Armed Queers SLC, they hosted a queer resistance, I guess they would call it, at the University of Utah a little bit earlier than this, and they were evidently had a presence at the event. What do you know about that investigation? Because it looks like the FBI has expanded it to that, according to reports.
Yeah, well, they're going to expand into anything that comes in. Remember, they had thousands upon thousands of leads coming in. And as Kash Patel said, everything gets run down. And my time in the Bureau in New York during 9/11, we had everything that came in. So they're going to run down every single lead, every single possibility to see what the connection is. You know, at the onset, a potential connection here might just be the fuel to the fire for someone who is actually looking to escalate and do something critically violent to another human being.
Right. And they do have a lot of violent actions and proclamations on their websites. So I want you to hear this exchange between Josh Hawley and the FBI director about where this investigation's going and how wide it is as it relates to Discord. Let's listen.
I see the public reports that the Discord thread had as many as 20 additional users. It sounds like you're trying to run down all of that to see if that's accurate, who else may have been on that thread, what they may have known. Is that fair to say?
It's a lot more than that, and we're running them all down.
It's a lot more than 20?
Yes, sir.
Wow, a lot more than 20. How many people do you think are working this case, and what do you think they'll find?
How many people are working? It depends on how many tendrils go out from it. I think everyone's going to be all hands on deck on this one. And what I mean by that is every single office and every single agent, not just in a bureau, but in all federal law enforcement, is going to be set leads for whatever information could be attained from confidential human sources and other sources in their area of operation. And outside actors, yeah, there's potentiality for that, because our foreign adversaries love to sow distrust in our organizations, institutions, and that is a huge factor that could be definitely playing into this.
And that's what I think Katie Britt was getting at, the senator from Alabama, when she asked this question. Listen.
We must follow the money. Someone is funding this discourse. Do you believe, obviously, there are people here, unfortunately, American citizens that may be engaged in that, but do you also believe that some of this may be coming from overseas?
Yes.
So many of our enemies, you know, they could attack us frontally, or they could try to infiltrate society and turn us on ourselves. We saw a little bit of that with Russia in 2016. You know, they wanted us fighting each other. Do you think this could be a sophisticated operation to radicalize the next generation through these websites, through these chat centers?
I really think the self-radicalization that's going on that we saw in this case, it's organic to our society as a whole. But what's happening is our adversaries, like Russia in particular, are watching these developments and seeing how they can best capitalize on this, because it's a lot cheaper to insert someone in here to sow that distrust on Discord or another platform than it is to try to build up a military.
Absolutely. And we'll see. It's just amazing to me that he was more worried about his dad getting mad at him for losing his grandfather's gun, while at the same time there's a manhunt that will put him in prison and possibly give him the death penalty. I can't wrap my head around that type of thinking, but I guess we'll eventually get to the bottom of it. Robin, you see it all, you study it all, you follow it all. Robin Drake, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Still to come, Charlie spent his life fighting for free speech and the right to open debate. Patrick Bet-David does the same thing. He joins us next to put Charlie's life in perspective.
At Fisher Investments, we make
create a company that's like close to being a fascist. Like,
okay. How am I?
Sorry.
Let's go through this. How am I a fascist?
No. Dude, like you.
Can you name one thing I believe that's fascist?
You believe that like you are.
I'm such a bad fascist. I let the people who disagree open mic to talk to me for 2 hours uninterrupted.
I'm an
awful fascist.
Your personality is unique to you. Your gender is a category that you fall into.
I thought that gender is fluid.
Why are the IDF soldiers fighting Christian people during Easter? They're not allowing them to go into church.
Actually, that's not true. So let's talk about that. That's a lie.
Why don't you believe that white privilege exists?
Is there anything that you can't do that I can do?
No. We could do the same things if we put our minds to it.
Good. Then there's no white privilege.
You know how we heal our divides? By talking to people we disagree with.
Yep. All Charlie ever wanted to do was to prove people wrong. He wanted to be proven wrong. He wanted the debate, a healthy debate. Even if that debate didn't lead to a resolution, just a understanding, a mutual respect. You notice there was no hate, there was no anger. Even liberal host Bill Maher understood that.
The right-wingers, say what you want about them, but they talk to you. They're not into this leftist think. The left really has much more of a, I don't talk to you, I don't want to deal with you. That's why I love to have people like Charlie Kirk sit there as he did, because I'm not going to agree with most of what he says. Unless people get it through their thick skulls, you're going to have to talk to people.
Yeah. I'm not sure anyone's going to get through their skulls, but we're going to try. My next guest knows a thing or two about having a healthy debate. He does this all the time, very similar to Charlie. Joining me now is Valuetainment founder, Patrick Bet-David. Patrick, it's great to see you. Your thoughts about the exchanges we played and the ones that you wanted to engage in, too. The need for healthy debate for people that disagree.
Brian, great to be on with you. Thanks for having me on. I mean, that's the thing about Charlie that made him special. You know, there's very few times in a lifetime you get a once-in-a-generation type of guy, and he was it. He knew a lot about faith, was willing to debate it. He knew a lot about politics. He was willing to debate it. He was very well-read. He was a great speaker. He was a great leader. He was a synergist. He would be willing to, at his event, have people that are coming and giving their own messages. And sometimes as a synergist, you're hated because both sides are wanting to say, I need you to be 100% pro this, and I need you to be 100% anti this. And like, no, I just want to talk to all of you guys. And that's what made him special. I guess the people that I don't want to talk to when you're hearing all these messages, when Charlie got assassinated, we were at our conference, nearly 8,000 people in the room. Tony Robbins on stage speaking for 3 hours. He has no idea Charlie's been shot. I come up on stage, and then they announce that he's dead. And in that moment, I got off stage, and I talked to my 13-year-old son, who is a big fan of Charlie, and I know he was going through it. He says, Dad, I really need to see you. So I came back and had a conversation with him. And the reality of it is we need to think about this from a few different things. Parents, let me talk to you real quick, Brian, if I could. If you have a Gen Z child, son, old, 13 to 28 years old, but mainly 13 to 18, you may want to sit down and talk to them. You and I haven't had an assassination in our lifetime. I'm 46. Maybe if you're 60 plus, you experienced it. But we haven't. This is the first time. And every generation sees it in a different way. I think, you know, the conversation I had with him is realize that in this moment, there's going to be a lot of people that are acting in a silly way or acting in a way to get some attention, to get notice. Don't join that camp. Sit there, simmer what happened, process what happened. This was a man that was sitting there debating different issues. But I think Gen Z, Brian, from this event that took place, I think we're looking at some of our greatest leaders, president, governor, senators, business owners, content creators, influencers. We're going to see some of the greatest leaders of our generation that are going through it today, but we won't see them for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. That is the part that I'm most excited about of what Gen Z is going to be doing moving forward.
Right. A lot of promise, a lot of hope. People got to just calm down. Also, I saw that moment on stage and you got choked up. You had to relay that to an audience. And Anthony Robbins is one of the most level-headed, interesting people in the world. So you had a great person and a resource to talk to there. So in the big picture, Patrick, it's where do you go from here? So in the wake of his death, instead of lowering the temperature on Capitol Hill, where many people look to, sadly, it seems to be boiling over. With 58 Democrats voting against a resolution to honor just the life and legacy of Charlie Kirk. We didn't ask you to vote for him. And shouting matches taking center stage. I'll give an example. You got Chairman Byron Donalds and Rashida Tlaib going at it. And sure enough, that's right, using the term fascist. Watch this.
I think it's really important. We need to stand up against this. Fascist takeover. That's not a bad word. It's a fact.
Chairman, I think it's insane if the lady doesn't have an argument, but she's going to refer to me and some of my colleagues.
Mr. Donald,
we were from the Third Reich. This is insane.
You're going to look at 14, 15-year-olds as a bunch of criminals?
It's insane. Do I look like a member of the Third Reich to you, Ms. Tlaib? Is that what I look like to you?
You're the one taking your voting card.
Is that what you think? Is that what you think? Is that what you think?
No. That's unethical.
I think it's radical, and I think it's insane. And I'll respect everything that you say, but to say something like that to myself and a lot of my colleagues is way out of line.
That's how not to debate. And I can't blame the chairman because I've seen her do this too often before. If you were to offer them advice, what would it be?
Don't be surprised that this is happening. Anticipate more of this. Anticipate more people trying to incite this level of anger and emotion and divisiveness and, you know, pinning everybody against each other. Don't be surprised by this. Expect it, anticipate it. Now, you know, from the White House, they're trying to do their part to kind of lower the temperature. You're seeing some of the influencers online and on X. They're saying, well, you know, Republicans need to know what it feels like, and they need to be afraid every time they get on stage. That's when, you know, these YouTubers and Facebook and these guys need to get a hold of them and break down the concept of freedom of speech. Freedom of speech, debate any ideas you want. Inciting violence, that's a crime. You can't be inciting violence. I think we need to manage that a little bit better. The slippery slope of what we're going through right now. But I'm not surprised where she's saying what she's saying right there. I love the way Byron Donalds handled himself. Classy, respectful, going through it himself. But, you know, in every situation, like, I sit there and I ask myself, who is celebrating right now? Who is excited right now? Who is sitting there saying, oh, my God, we need more and more and incite more? You got China that's probably celebrating right now. You got Iran that's probably celebrating right now. You got a couple of these countries that are celebrating right now. And we have to understand this part. You're not ever going to get everybody, Brian. We're never going to get everybody on the same page to unify. It's going to be very difficult to do so. But the level-headed people need to continue selling being reasonable, selling being above it, leading other people as we're going through, is finding ways to lower the temperature. Because if we don't, remember in 1960s when this happened, the first person that got assassinated was John F. Kennedy. The next 4.5 years, two other people got assassinated. The other two were 2 months apart. One of them was MLK, then it was RFK. So for me, unless if the president and the folks at the White House find ways to fully lower the temperature and we let this thing keep going like this, this could be nasty the next few years, and we don't want that. Nobody wants that.
That's not how you debate. Debate the issues with a smile. That's what Charlie did, and that's what you do. Patrick, thanks so much. Appreciate you at this very important time.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining our audience. Meanwhile, coming up straight ahead on this show, we're going to take a look back at some of our favorite moments with Charlie Kirk right here on this broadcast. Don't move. More of One Nation featuring Charlie Kirk in a moment.
A better heart helps.
So it's been a day of mourning around the world for Charlie Kirk. Charlie was never afraid to walk onto a college campus or anywhere and challenge students or young people on anything they might be misinformed about. He made it his mission to bring facts directly to young people, and it worked. Charlie was a driving force in helping turn out the youth to vote for President Trump. He was also a frequent guest, an always impactful guest on One Nation. Tonight, we look back at some of our most memorable conversations, starting with President Trump's reelection celebration last year, when we highlighted Charlie's face-to-face campus exchanges with students across the country. Watch.
What is her greatest...
Hey, free speech? Free speech?
Yeah, they have the freedom of speech to boo you. That's right.
Do I have the freedom of speech? Okay.
Did he, like, actually end war?
Yeah, it was the first president in 32 years for no new wars for 4 years.
Charlie, what was it like on those campuses engaging in a script? There were no scripts. You had no idea what they were going to ask you.
Yeah, it was an open mic, and we did it at 25 college campuses this last semester. Great to see you, by the way. Brian, it was amazing. You know, after the first couple, I started to realize, I said, these crowds that we are drawing and attracting, it's not normal. I mean, we are having thousands of students start to show up to these events at University of Wisconsin-Madison. We had 5,000 at the University of Georgia. And I turned to my team, I said, you know, guys, let's keep this a little quiet, which is unusual for us because, you know, we like to draw attention to things. I said, I think we're going to do much better with younger voters than any of the public polling shows, with both young men and young women. And we did the tough work at Turning Point Action. We registered them to vote. We chased their ballot. We had over 1,500 people on staff that were working these college campuses and the associated communities.
If you think in retrospect, the information that these students are getting on campus is misinformation or just no information?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I have to say, though, thanks to President Trump's strategy to embrace TikTok and to go on some of these podcasts such as Joe Rogan and Theo Von and the Nelk Boys, he was able to reach young voters without any of the propaganda lens, outside of their professors. And so, yeah, their professors might get 90 minutes to drone on and on about why they think America's a terrible country, but we get them 8 hours a day with a supercomputer in their pocket called an iPhone.
A couple days ago, we were at University of South Florida. We drew over 2,000 students, Brian, and this is in the midst of all the media coverage of the Trump administration saying that the world is ending after an election cycle, and we had 2,000 kids at a very liberal school wait for hours and listen to me take questions at an open mic. We see this in the data, and we see this on the ground, the work that we're doing at Turning Point USA. We are seeing the next generation become profoundly more conservative than even their parents.
So you think that Joe Biden would have won had he had just not unfortunately dropped out?
No, I don't. I think President Trump would have also defeated him, probably even by even more than former Vice President Kamala Harris. On display was one of the greatest examples of media malpractice in the last couple decades. People wonder why the media is at all-time low trust levels. This is why. Not only did the media refuse to cover Joe Biden's mental decline, they covered it up. People need to understand is that what you see expressed on these college campuses, the anti-Semitism, the Jew hatred, the anti-Americanism, the anti-Western values, it is an outgrowth of the professors. It's one thing to have bad policies like Harvard has or have bad policies like Columbia. We need to go a level deeper. It's the faculty themselves that need to be removed from these universities and from these colleges. They are the ones that are instilling the anti-Semitic, anti-Western views on these kids that we are then subsidizing through federal grants, federal aid, medical research, and federal student loans. We need a complete recalibration of how we view higher education in this country.
Is that important to you, to get people that disagree with you?
Well, first of all, that's what colleges should be, is that it should be an open mic type environment where people feel free to express their views regardless of what they are. We are trying to actually bring back college. We're trying to bring back what the Academy used to be. We go to these college campuses for just a couple hours. We draw thousands of students, and we have real discussions, real dialogue in the pursuit of truth.
And to fulfill for you that you can own a home, that you can have a better future, and we're hearing from the next generation that they no longer want to be part of the left, and they're just missing that activist spark that was there under Obama, and we are seeing a real right-wing revolution happening with the next generation.
Charlie Kirk, thanks so much. You had so much to do with it, and you're a guy in your 30s, so who knows, one day you'll probably be running for president yourself. Charlie, thank you. So you can find more of Charlie's interviews on One Nation's Facebook page. We have an Instagram page and X pages. Some of the interviews we'll have in its entirety. Charlie Kirk, rest in peace.
You're looking at Carvana's newest and probably.
All right, before you go to bed, your sneak peek of the week. First off, world leaders set to gather at the United Nations right across town. It's going to be the 80th General Assembly. It's going to be exciting, especially on Tuesday. That's when President Trump was set to be the headliner. What else this week? The trial continues for Ryan Ruth, the second would-be assassin. He is representing himself in court. It has made it a carnival. The WNBA playoffs will start this week, too, as well. The semifinals will continue, I should add. I'll be watching. I know you will, too. And did I mention golf? Right on Long Island, a few miles from my house. Bethpage, Ryder Cup, Team Europe against Team USA. I'm going to pull for Team USA. Now, catch me on tour. Fox Nation is streaming it. History, Liberty, and Laughs, Richmond, Virginia, 6 days from today, September 27th. Then Pottstown, Pennsylvania, November 1st. Catch me on radio from 9 to noon. Great roster of guests. I'll give you an example. We got Michael Goodwin, Michael Allen, Lawrence Jones, and, of course, Fox and Friends in just a moment. He'll be starting before you know it. I'm going to change outfits and might even take a shower. My last message, it's really two. Always stay within yourself and keep it right here on Fox News.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.